item of the morning. Item 12, Columbia River Fisheries above Bonneville Dam, briefing and public hearing. And I will turn that over to you, Jeff and Bill.
Good morning, Chair Smith, members of the Commission, Director. My name is Jeff Wickersham. I'm the regional captain here out of Region 5 for Fish and Wildlife. With me is Bill Twite, his awesomeness, with the Columbia River Management Unit. Thought I'd throw that in there.
First time this morning the word comes up.
There it was. I wanted to talk with you today about a WAC change to the Columbia River Fisheries above Bonneville Dam, specifically WAC 22359. Changes to this were made pursuant to language at USV Oregon to bring concurrency to several different rules, and there were three specific ones, so I'd like to walk you through that today. The Regulatory Coordination Committee, a subcommittee of consisting of law enforcement policy representatives from Oregon, Washington, the Columbia River Intertribal Fisheries Commission, and the four Columbia River Treaty Tribes. They were tasked with identifying specific regulations where lack of consistency between rules caused enforcement and management problems. As part of that, the Columbia Basin Law Enforcement Council, a group of law enforcement entities within the Columbia Basin, was used to identify problems and propose solutions. This went back in 2010, and it identified 10 priorities and possible solutions. Those were taken back to the RCC and the Greater USV Oregon Policy Committee for discussion and possible adoption. Three have been adopted at this point, and we are the last to adopt them. So the three issues are tribal identification, gear identification, and release of sturgeon, all issues that are that had very large gaps in terms of what the language between the different tribes, what CRTFIC, the states of Oregon and Washington had. Nobody had the same language, and that caused numerous management and enforcement problems on the water of the Columbia River itself, especially where we have that concurrent jurisdiction and concurrency that we spoke about yesterday. Lots of issues there. The first one, pursuant to the policy committee, was this one, per tribal regulation, all sturgeon not of legal size shall be released to the water unharmed. Sturgeon not captured for legal harvest shall not be possessed on land. For purposes of this regulation, docks and boat ramps are not considered land. This only pertains to the tribal fishery. This doesn't have to do with our commercial non-tribal fisheries below Bonneville or anywhere else. This is very strictly pursuant to any tribal fishery, Columbia River above Bonneville Dam up to McNary, and not the tributaries. The next issue is issue 5, and this actually contained two different pieces, and it had to do with ID requirement and display. And just to simply put it, there was a lack of consistency amongst certain regulations where certain treaty tribes actually didn't require their members to show the state law enforcement their tribal ID. That has since been fixed, and all the treaty tribes, CRTFIC, have all updated their language, so that is now required, sort of their fishing license, so to speak, so that we know who they are, it's required to have. It was enforced in a way by just referring any of those issues that we found previously to CRTFIC, and they would address it if need be. And we always had the opportunity to call CRTFIC and verify tribal enrollment status or anything if we were on the water and had questions. This simply actually allows us to have some enforcement teeth in terms of requiring people to have that when they're engaged in a commercial or subsistence fishery. The next one was ID on gear. If any of you have driven the Columbia River Gorge upstream of Bonneville, you can often see buoys and other items out in the water denoting where set nets are. Up until this regulation was put in place, or this consistency measure, there oftentimes was no identification in any of the gear speaking to who owned it, what tribe it was with. You simply see a buoy, and sometimes you'd have to drag it to even know if there was gear attached. Now it has requirements in terms of what is required for that gear to be on the water at the time it's being used. As I said, all these changes were contained in WAC 22359, Columbia River Fisheries above Bonneville Dam. When I went through this, I cleaned up some existing language that was necessary to implement this these rule changes. Some language and definitions predated merger. That means Department of Fisheries versus Department of Game. And what became very apparent was salmon was the only thing that was mentioned in many of these rules, not game fish, not steelhead. Those fish were not mentioned. That's very important to implementing fisheries that are lawful and orderly. If we have a closure that's only for salmon or gear that's only for salmon, it doesn't address steelhead, large loopholes exist. So we close that at the same time. Additionally, individuals were permitted to participate in the Wanapum fishery that were previously identified by name in the permanent WAC. So we had a number, I think 12 or 14 individuals, that I'll show you here later, that their names were in permanent WAC. That's been removed. Some of them are no longer with us, so I think that's important. This language dated back to at least 1985. There was also a section that was removed referencing Lone Pine and our enforcement authority over that. However, Lone Pine is on the Oregon shore, and I don't know how Washington can extend our jurisdiction onto the Oregon shore to enforce a fishing issue there. I removed that as part of this as well. Now, a little snafu I'd like to point out to the commission that happened yesterday. We had hearing notice that's before you under item 12 in your notebook shows that the hearing was scheduled for, I believe on page 2, it was scheduled for the Ridgefield office at 8 a.m. yesterday morning. As such, Scott Bird, our agency rules coordinator, and I held a public hearing at the Ridgefield office to which nobody appeared or gave any public testimony on this item. So I just wanted you to know that we did hold that hearing even though we thought it would be today. So I apologize for that. Now, if the commissioners would honor me by turning to the actual rule change section itself, I'll walk you through some of these changes so that you can see them. If you have any questions, please make sure to ask me as we go through. And I'll be really fast here. And I don't have it up here, so you'll have to reference it in your notebook. I apologize. WAC 223-59-010 is the section that we changed pursuant to tribal ID requirements. This whole WAC under 223-59 addresses concurrent jurisdiction, which we exercise with the tribes and through the Columbia River Compact for enabling and regulating the fisheries on the Columbia, both below and above Bonneville Dam. Most of the current language predated merger, mostly drafted in the 1970s. There's been a lot of changes since 1971, and I felt it was necessary to update this language. 223-59-010, you can see the changes there. It spoke pretty much only to commercial fisheries, not subsistence or ceremonial fisheries in terms of area and qualification. That was changed. And now the rule is consistent with US v. Oregon. The next WAC, 020, commercial seasons. You'll notice that salmon was crossed out. It's now fish. And this is also now concurrent with how the fisheries manage under compact, with most of the seasons in terms of commercial fishing, with commercial gear types being managed through compact action and emergency rule. And that's the basis for our commercial salmon seasons there. The next section, 040, lawful fishing, not just salmon fishing, but lawful fishing gear, mesh size. Again, these are managed mostly for gill nets. These are managed through emergency rule, not through permanent action that's in WAC. And there's multiple seasons, including food fish and game fish, that are now included in this, whereas before it was just salmon. 060, this is a big section, and I'd just like to let the commission know that there's very likely going to be additional actions coming forth in US v. Oregon that are going to be trying to bring consistency to additional rules. Some of them are the subsistence rules. I believe there's efforts to change the gear types that are there, no longer make them commercial fishing or subsistence fishing. It'll be by gear type, whether it's hoop net or more personal use type activities. And it's very complicated. So this one was very hard to walk through, and I tried to keep it as simple as we could. But at the end of the day, a number of changes to the section. Subsistence type gear is almost always open on the Columbia River above Bonneville, and commercial sales from these gear types is allowed by the tribes and therefore adopted by us throughout the year. It does not deal with gill nets. Subsistence-type gear is hoop nets, dip nets, bag nets, hook-and-line-type gear. When you see commercial referenced in this, it's referring to commercial gill nets for the most part. So I just like to make that distinction so you're aware. USV Oregon consensus language for gear ID was added in here, as talked about with item number 5. We cleaned up additional language. The Wanapum fishery language I referenced earlier removed the names, and that was done in coordination with our Region 2 and Region 3 fish program staff and Mr. Twite next to me here to make sure that we didn't harm any of those agreements that were there, while adding some clarity to that. Additionally, on page 3, you'll see under Section 3, a lot was crossed out there. It was speaking directly about commercially licensed fish buyers. And what that did was, if we had somebody that was buying subsistence or closed season fish, this actually prohibited us from taking action in state court against anybody unless they were a commercially licensed wholesale dealer. So there are a number of people that we routinely find that are trafficking in fish that are not licensed. This prohibited us from taking some action in this area. That was cleaned up. And now it speaks just to a person acting in the capacity of a wholesale fish dealer. And that also references language that we changed in our fish buying rules elsewhere in WAC. 359.070, seasons and gear for shad. This was just cleaned up to add some of the gear language as well. And there is sometimes a shad fishery that's concurrent with summer salmon and sockeye fisheries. And there's typically not a specific shad fishery, but just in case, it's right there. 359.080 deals with sturgeon and that new language in terms of what's lawful to be retained and how that's going to be managed in these waters, as well as language pursuant to gear identification. The big section that's going to be changed at a later date, I didn't really change this except to make it very specific that it applies to river mouths and all fish, not just salmon, is 359.090, and this is our river mouth sanctuaries. And that'll be changed hopefully at a later date as we get some consistency with the other co-managers there. And then the last section is 359.110, dealing with Indian ceremonial fishing. This is a very specific period of time in the spring when the spring Chinook are coming. The ceremonial fishery occurs just as those fish are entering the water. No commercial or subsistence fisheries have occurred at that time where sales are allowed to the general public. It is the most tightly regulated fishery of all the tribal fisheries. The tribes actually issue permits to their individual fishers for specific numbers of fish which go to specific areas. All I did on this one was add the gear identification requirements that were required in USV Oregon, and there's going to likely be additional rule changes on this coming from the RCC to get everybody online at that forum with the same rules, because they are all different at this point. And then all the way at the bottom on page 7, there's a repealer. Three sections were removed, and I'd like to speak directly to why these were removed. 359.030, weekly open fishing periods for salmon. It addressed a season that by permanent rule had no open season. And in fact, if you go through and look at the WAC right now, it says open periods, none. It made no sense that that was there, and we managed those fisheries through the compact action emergency rule at this point. That was removed. 359.050, open area salmon for lone pine. Again, that was the location I was talking about on the Oregon shore. That's been removed. And the last one, 359.100, unlawful provision for salmon. Fishing occurs in this area using subsistence gear under tribal rule, and commercial sales are allowed from time to time. The rule also allowed gill nets as it referred to the Columbia River fishing seasons, and the rule was not applicable. It dealt with the Klickitat River. And so there's an area there where it's UNA for the Yakima tribe. They fish in it all the time. Our department actually owns some property, but that's where the Yakima Nation fishway is that they recently constructed in, 5 or 10 years ago, I believe. And they operate that site. Their fishermen have an exclusive fishing area in that area. And somehow we had a WAC that was saying that they couldn't sell those fish unless the Columbia River was open, which didn't make sense. So that language has been removed as well to be concurrent with what's going on there in terms of management. And I think that is all the changes.
Bill, did you just backup support there?
Since I'm the rep on both Compact and USV Oregon, if there were any questions that went to either of those.
Then I'll open it up for questions. Yes, Commissioner Thornburg.
on subsistence fishery 359-060. I'm just wondering, in terms of the resale issue, that is wholesale fish buyer defined elsewhere? So that's really, because it's changed to person acting in the capacity of a wholesale fish buyer. Is that as clear as it should be?
Yes, it's Commissioner. Yes, it's actually referenced elsewhere in WAC under that same language in several other rules.
Okay.
Around, I believe even the below Bonneville rules reference that new language as well.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Any other? Yes.
This is a big change, so thanks for working as hard as you have on it. There's a lot of gear changes in here, and I think you explained that they're often addressed elsewhere. So my question is specific to 020, where what is struck is the length of a gill net or a set net, 300 feet. What I hear a lot about is mesh size of these particular, that type of gear. Length is unusual. And so does striking that allow longer nets?
Commissioner Baker, yes, it does. In fact, the tribes have specific rules that are not consistent pertaining to the length of nets that they're allowed to use on those waters. So through the Columbia River Compact, certain allowable net sizes with mesh size are allowed under those emergency rules that are adopted from that compact action, and that's pursuant only to gear nets and set nets, and now drift nets, which we're seeing more of. But those mesh sizes and lengths are typically prescribed in that rule set through emergency rule.
May I ask a follow-up real quick? Are these nets all identified as well as the buoys and everything else? So if there are problems with ghost nets or otherwise, do you guys know who they belong to?
With the changes that are prescribed in this requested language, it would allow us to be more efficient at pursuing violators and addressing those violations that we find on the water.
With that, right? Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe her question's more specific is, I understand the buoys are marked for identification. Are the nets marked so that in the case that they are released from the buoy, either by accident or purpose, that you can identify the net itself?
Commissioner Graybill, no, they're not. It's simply that buoy or the line attached to that buoy. Oftentimes we find in these fisheries that members are switching gear. There's a lot of gear out there. Multiple people sometimes fish the same net, and that can be very difficult to hold certain people accountable at times. But the point of adding the language to identify at least a buoy is you have an idea of where to go to start asking questions. And our partners at Intertribal Police, as well as the four treaty tribes and their law enforcement, they've been very helpful at helping us find people when these circumstances happen where we have a ghost net, something comes loose, we find a diver net that's not identified. There's sometimes some kind of identification on the corks that we can use to go after somebody, but there is so much trading in this gear, it's often very hard to enforce at times.
All right. I think that answers the question. Thank you.
Commissioner Carpenter?
Thank you. Are these fisheries enforced strictly by tribal enforcement, or do you have authority as well to monitor that?
Vice Chair, yes, we do have authority to enforce certain provisions of these rules. And if a fishery is occurring outside of an open season, if the gear type is in violation, or if a member is not an actual member of one of the four Columbia River Treaty tribes, we do have some enforcement authority outside of that. We work with our partners quite a bit to make sure that the violation is going to the jurisdiction that would possibly have the greatest chance for success in any type of action.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
On that, we will break for lunch. There's no public input.